everyone. Welcome back to another off-season edition of Jays Talk with Shohan Lee. Thanks for being with me as the slow off-season continues. Still no major news surrounding either Roky Sasaki, Vladimir Guerrero Jr., or any other big bats on the free agent market. But we do continue to monitor what's going on around the world of baseball. And today's off-season conversation, the reason why this is on the podcast feed, is coming from the host of this fine program, one Jeff Blair. I'm kind of like the caretaker of Jays Talk. You know, I'm like that middle inning reliever they put in when you're up or down big, or like that position player who pitches in blowouts. Blair, and certainly Barker as well, but in this case, Blair, they are the front end rotation pieces. So I had a chance to catch up with Jeff. I asked him to join me on Sportsnet today. We caught up after some time off for him. We spoke about the Roky Sasaki sweepstakes, the latest on Vladimir Guerrero Jr.'s contract negotiations. And we also spent some time remembering the late Bob Uecker as well. I thought it was a great chat. It usually is with Jeff, as you know. Here he is, Jeff Blair on Jays Talk. Let's chat with our pal Jeff Blair, host of Blair and Barker and columnist, of course, for Sportsnet.ca. Jeff, how are you today?
I'm doing well, man. How are you?
Good. How's your time off? How's your vacation? Did you feel rested, ready to get back into the swing of things?
Yeah, pretty much. Not much has changed since I left. I guess Jeff Hoffman has changed. That's good. But it's good to be back. And hopefully the Jays will give us something to talk about in the next couple of days.
Yeah, it was kind
accent,
of...
you know, emphasis on the word hopeful.
On hopeful, yeah, I'm with you, Jeff. It's funny, the news, I guess, of the last couple of days seemed to largely revolve around Roky Sasaki, and I think most fans, not that they're out on the Sasaki news necessarily, but it seems to be more of like a resigned, I'll believe it when I see it type of reaction I find when we look at the text line and so on, mainly because it's not really about the money, right? Like, he'll roughly get the same amount of cash from any of the Dodgers, Padres, or Jays. So largely about the quality of team, I would imagine. I guess I just find it hard to believe. I don't know about you. I just find it hard to believe that any free agent would pick Jays over the Dodgers when the Dodgers are bearing multiple MVPs and Hall of Famers and are the defending World Series champs.
I guess, you know, but I kind of look at it a little more the way Jim Bowden looked at it when he talked to us on our podcast. And that is, I mean, a couple of things. First of all, Roky Sasaki essentially is using, this is his jumping off point, right? He's signing with a major league team knowing that he's probably not going to make a ton of money until he achieves free agency. So I would think if I'm Roky Sasaki, yeah, I'm sure Roky Sasaki wants to win. Absolutely, he wants to win. But if I'm Roky Sasaki and I know that my earnings are going to be limited for the first 3 years I'm in the game, and, you know, all things are relative. I mean, he's going to probably get, what, a $10 million bonus eventually, but all things are relative. So if I'm Roky Sasaki, I'm really looking at two things. One, who's going to keep me healthy? Because if I can't rack up innings, and if I can't make starts and all that good stuff, if I can't establish my career early, it's going to cost me when I become a free agent or when I get ready to sign my big contract. So I'm looking at an organization that can keep me healthy. You know, secondly, and I think Jim Bowden touched on this a little bit, we don't know how much the money means to Roky Sasaki. I've come to the conclusion that basically money means everything to everybody when it comes to professional athletes. I mean, you'll hear excuses, or, you know, I want to go to the environment, yada yada, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, the money is what's going to matter. And, you know, Jim Bowden's point was, look, if you're Roky Sasaki, your earnings are going to be relatively limited for the first 3 years you're in the game. So where are you going to make your money? Well, you might be able to make it up in endorsements. I suppose, you know, you could have all sorts of incentive clauses in your contract and things of that nature. But this is why I'm not certain the Dodgers are the slam dunk everybody thinks they are. I mean, first of all, if he goes to the Dodgers, he's not going to be the ace. He's not going to be the number two starter, probably. He's certainly not going to be the big man on campus. That is going to be Shohei Ohtani. And keep in mind, Shohei Ohtani is going to pitch again this year. So there could conceivably be fewer innings for Roky Sasaki. Secondly, there's one thing the Dodgers don't do very well, and that's keep their major league pitchers healthy.
That's fair.
I mean, they really don't. It's almost scary how bad they are as an organization when it comes to keeping the pitchers healthy. So if I'm Roky Sasaki and those things are important to me, if I had to rank the teams in terms of where I think I could get the most bang for my buck, if I'm Roky Sasaki, to me, number one is San Diego. Number two is Toronto. And number three is L.A. And I've kind of operated under the assumption all along that the San Diego Padres would probably be his first choice. Now, there are some issues with the Padres, right? They're in the middle of an ownership dispute. That shouldn't have an impact on their ability to pay whatever it is, $10.3 million or whatever, to get Roky Sasaki. But if you're looking for stability, that may be a factor. So, I know it's a long-winded answer, but I guess what I'm saying is I've just kind of always assumed that the Padres would be number one, plus they have Yu Darvish. The Padres kind of give them everything L.A. does and maybe a little more, right? West Coast, Yu Darvish, so you've got that Japanese influence there that you also have with Shohei Ohtani. You're going to get more innings there than you are with the Dodgers. So I've just kind of operated under the assumption all along it's San Diego 1, maybe Toronto 2, and LA 3. But I think there's such a huge gap between what San Diego and everybody else can offer him that, I'd be really surprised if he doesn't end up there.
Well, you mentioned Yu Darvish, and some of those reports have said that Darvish has actually played like a mentorship role to Sasaki over many years. I mean, Sasaki's only 23, and Darvish has been, a star MLB pitcher for the better part of a decade plus, essentially, right? So I do understand. I get that idea. I think I'm with you, Jeff. Like, the Padres' ownership situation with the widow of the late Peter Seidler suing his brothers for control of the team, part of me wonders if that matters too, but maybe it doesn't matter now, but I kind of wonder, depending, again, who wins that fight, I wonder if it would matter when it's time for Roky Sasaki to get a second contract potentially with the Padres, which, again, wouldn't be for like 5 or 6 years at this point, but I wonder if that's something players take into account.
Yeah, I don't know if I would necessarily be looking 5 or 6 years down the road. I think you're right. I mean, look, whatever happens there, it's a pretty safe bet that the Padres aren't going to be having a fire sale at any time soon. To kind of swing it over to the Blue Jays a little bit, you kind of made this point, and other people have made this point. What would the Blue Jays' selling point be with Roky Sasaki? Well, okay, they do keep their major league pitchers healthy for the most part. You would come here, and quite frankly, you would have the opportunity to be the staff ace in a couple of years because Kevin Gausman, God love him. I hope he can have a repeat this year of what he did last year, but I don't think anybody would be surprised if Kevin Gausman's career starts to fade a little bit.
Yeah.
Chris Bassett's got another year left in his contract, and Jose Berrios is a workhorse. I don't know if anybody necessarily looks at him as an ace. So if you're Roky Sasaki,
he can also opt out too, right, Jeff? Like after 2026, Berrios can opt out and maybe make even more money.
Absolutely, he can
right?
opt out. Absolutely. So my point is, of those three teams, Roky Sasaki would probably be closer to being the ace of the staff on Toronto than any of the other three teams. As Jim Bowden said, one thing about coming to Toronto, and listen, I don't buy this. I've never bought this whole thing that if you go to the Blue Jays, you're not just playing for a team, you're playing for a country. I mean, that's nice. That's, it's kind of, it sounds good to fans, but I don't think the average player really gives a rat's ass about whether or not they've got a quote-unquote entire country cheering for him or not. I mean, Roky Sasaki is going to have an entire country cheering for him, Japan, regardless of that. But in Toronto, pitching for a team that has, that is owned by a communications company, I would think that the chances of making money outside of the game, of making money from endorsements, are probably a little better here than they would be anyplace else. Those are the selling points as far as Toronto is concerned. Now, what are the down points? Look at the roster. Look at the minor league system. If I said to you, which of the Dodgers, Padres, and Blue Jays are going to be a really good team in 2026? I would suggest that the Blue Jays would be number three in that list. So that to me is the big negative, right? The Jays haven't positioned themselves very well for the future. The minor league system's not very good. You've got two players in Bichette and Guerrero that you haven't been able to come to, well, let's leave aside Bichette for a minute and focus on Guerrero. You haven't been able to come to a multi-year contract agreement with him. So, I mean, if you're Roki Sasaki and you do the old thing where you draw a line down the middle of the page and you go pluses and minuses for each team in each market, you know, I still think the minuses for him in Toronto are greater than they are in any of those other markets. But again, looking at what the Dodgers are about, I'm probably still putting Toronto a little ahead of LA.
Do you think the Sasaki decision is what's holding up other moves? Because for a week or so, Jeff, it kind of felt like we were on the verge of seeing Anthony Santander become a Blue Jay, and now it's just been like complete radio silence in the sense.
Yeah,
of
I don't know. Players. Yeah, I would think that if the Padres and the Dodgers were also involved in the hunt for Alonso and Bregman and Santander, so I don't really think so. I mean, look, it's. Let's assume the Jays sign him. I mean, I don't know the number off the top of my head, but it's probably going to cost them about $10 million. Well, that shouldn't preclude them from doing anything else in the meantime, right? I mean, you should be able to sign Anthony Santander and get Roki Sasaki signed at the same time. So, yeah, I don't buy that. If Alonso and Bregman and Santander were going elsewhere, then you know, maybe I'd see it. But I just think that the market forces that are working for those players, I just think those that's something completely completely separate from Roki Sasaki.
We're chatting with Jeff Blair, host of Blair and Barker, columnist for Sportsnet.ca, of course, here on Sportsnet Today. Show Ali here with you until the top of the hour. You mentioned Vladdy, Jeff, and of course the Vladdy contract negotiations loom over all things, as we know. I mean, gosh, it's been that way for years at this point. It's interesting. We've gotten so many different reports about Vladdy's stature with the team in the last couple of weeks, even, right? Like a week ago, Bob Nightingale of USA Today saying that player and team are 100 million apart. Andy Martino with SNY in New York saying yesterday that according to league sources, the Jays are, quote unquote, still weighing whether or not they want to extend their player. And then actually just before the show started, like literally an hour ago, our very own Ben Nicholson-Smith saying the Jays are actively negotiating an extension with Vladdy. So there are just so many different conflicting reports out there. And look, I mean, as we know, a lot of it is player negotiating through the media, the team negotiating through the media. How do you, when you see all of these different reports, how do you parse through what you choose to believe and not?
Listen, everything I've been told from primary sources and secondary sources is that the Jays and Vladdy are talking about a negotiation. They have been for a while. There hasn't been, at least as far as we know, a lot of movement. We are led to believe, I mean, certainly nobody has come out and said, you know, that report about them being $100 million apart is far-fetched. I think most people who understand how the Blue Jays value their players, value players in general, and most people who, you know, have a good reading of where the market's going, it seems as if, right, it makes sense that the sides would be $100 million apart because it's just the way the Jays go about their business. And, you know, Vladdy's in a position where his value goes up every day he gets closer to free agency. You know, Vladdy is not... If Vladdy becomes a free agent next year, he's not signing a $300 or $350 million contract. No. He's just not. It's going to be at least $400 million. It just is. All you have to do is look at history. All you have to do is look at his age. It's going to be $400 million. So if the Blue Jays aren't prepared to go to that level, you know, they can, frankly, they can talk all they want. And you know, the thing that I find really frustrating about this as well is there's so many ways to do this. I mean, you could throw in opt-out clauses. You can bake in a whole bunch of things because Vladdy's young enough that you can say to him, look, let's get a long-term deal done. And if it doesn't work out for you, if you're unhappy with it or we're unhappy with it 3 years down the road or 4 years down the road, you can go back into free agency at, what, the age of 29 or 30. You're going to get a great contract if you perform and if you're healthy. It's just, I keep saying this, it is such an easy deal to negotiate, and it has been an easy deal to negotiate for the past couple of years. It should be one of the easiest contractual negotiations in Blue Jays history if both sides want to get it done. And you know, I think you really have to ask yourself, how much does the Blue Jays front office, and I'm stressing front office, I'm not talking about anybody else, I'm talking about Mark Shapiro and Ross Atkins, how much do they really want to get this done? It seems as if they don't have as much faith in what future value for Vladdy as other people do. So, you know, yeah, are they negotiating? Yes, absolutely. They should be negotiating. I mean, what is time's wasting, right? Spring training starts when the pitchers and catchers report on the 13th or the 15th or something like that. So, yeah, they better be negotiating. But, you know, I think at some point, and I know Blue Jays fans don't want to hear this, but at some point you have to step back and say, look, if this doesn't get done, do you really want to have 1 year of Vladdy, 1 year of Bo, let them walk, and then, you know, and then take the compensatory draft picks? Or do you want to trade Vladdy? Do you want to just, you know, it's not going to get done. Whatever the reason is, it's not going to get done. Do you want to move Vladdy and try to position yourself, you know, for your next window of opportunity? And you know, frankly, I think smart Blue Jays fans have probably been preparing themselves for that discussion for a couple of years.
I you'd said before, Jeff, that I think on Jays Talk or maybe on Blair and Barker, maybe on both, honestly, that at one point when Jose Bautista's deal had to get done, that Rogers stepped in and had a hand in that. You think that ever happens with Vladdy?
I'll tell you the truth. I honestly don't know. I just don't know. I don't know what ownership thinks about that. You know, with Jose Bautista, I think it was pretty obvious by the way it happened that Mark Shapiro was, would I say he's not in favor? Let's just say that I don't think it was as high a priority for Mark Shapiro as it was for other people. And you know, it's interesting if you go back and read some of the articles that were written in Cleveland when Mark Shapiro left, like some of the exit interviews, if you want, there's some pretty interesting stuff in there. You know, it becomes apparent that there were times when Mark Shapiro was with the Cleveland Guardians, that there were decisions made by people like Chris Antonetti, the general manager, and other people around him. There were personnel decisions made that Mark wasn't entirely in favor of, but he went along with it because the people around him felt so convicted in making those decisions. They felt it was absolutely the right thing to do. So having said that, I honestly don't know. I honestly don't know how, you know, just how significant it is right now for anybody other than Mark and Ross Atkins to be dealing with this. And this is another thing with this front office. You know, there's still, despite all the years they've been here, there's still kind of an unknown as to who actually does what when it comes to negotiations, right? Like who, we think Mark has the final say. He should have the final say because he's president and CEO. But what is his role in these talks? What is Ross's role in these talks? It's a big front office. They've got a lot of people. How many people are involved in the actual decision? So there are a lot of factors at play there. But I think from a distance, you would have to say one thing that is obvious is that, you know, Mark Shapiro has the full confidence of the people of the people above him.
Jeff, before I let you go, and I appreciate you doing this for me, I know you're still off, so I appreciate you getting behind a mic for me, as always. You know, I want to ask you a couple of questions that really, I'll be honest, have nothing to do with the Blue Jays. Boffo and I were discussing books yesterday, actually. I don't know if you saw this on social media. A.J. Brown caught on the sidelines of the Eagles game with that Inner Excellence book. That was pretty great. We were talking about books that have had impacts on us. And you're, I think, a great person to ask this question to. Now, A.J. Brown's book was not a sports book, but I am curious. Is there a sports book that you think all sports fans should read at some point in their life? Like, I recently read Moneyball for the first time, and that was a very interesting read. I've enjoyed some of Jeff Perlman's books, like The Bad Guys Won on the 86 Mets. I like Shoe Dog, that Phil Knight memoir. But are there any sports books for you that like immediately jump to mind?
Yeah, I mean, the first book, and it is a baseball book, and I think every baseball fan should read it, is Ball 4 by Jim Boughton. Now, it's dated. Right, we're talking about a first-person account written by a guy in the 60s, a pitcher. But it was the first time that a professional athlete sat down and took notes about all the stuff that went on the road, all the stuff that went on in the charter, all the stuff that went on in the clubhouse. And it was a revolutionary book. It completely peeled away or completely changed a lot of preconceived notions about athletes. I mean, a professional athlete, the baseball players are there, all their warts are exposed, right? And at the time, it was just, I mean, just think about what it would have taken for a player to write a book that exposes all the secrets, all the inner workings of a locker room or a clubhouse. And this is back before social media, right? This is back when everybody thought that every professional athlete was, you know, the nicest guy in the world. And boy, they didn't drink. They didn't do anything. You know, they were all happily married and they were all devoted to charity and working hard and all this stuff. And Jim Boughton's book kind of showed, you know what? There's some scoundrels, right? If you get 25 males together and put them in a room, you're probably going to find the odd scoundrel. And that book was so... just changed completely the way people perceived professional athletes. And it's still a good read because it's funny. You know, there's stuff in it that, you know, probably seems a little dated and a little quaint now, but it's still kind of funny just to read what goes on, you know, or what went on inside a locker room, inside a clubhouse. So that book is always, I mean, I've got two copies of the book on my shelf. So that would be okay. Number one. The other one would be Terry Pluto's book on the ABA, Foul Balls, which is hilarious. Similarly, it was kind of an inside look at the ABA back in the glory days of the ABA. It's a lot of fun. Those would be the two sports books that immediately stand out to me.
Okay. All right. I like it, Jeff. I honestly, for a second there, I thought you said Jim Boughton. I thought, boy, Jim Boughton wrote a book in the 60s? Like,
Jim Boughton.
He's not that old.
B-O-U-T-O-N. Boughton.
Okay.
Although I would read, listen, I'll tell you something, because I know Jim Boughton a little bit. If he ever wanted to write a book,
I'd read it.
Completely unfiltered.
Yeah.
Oh, I'd buy that in a second.
For sure.
Because it would be, yeah, there was a lot that went on in his career that would be fascinating to read. But those are the first two books that kind of come to mind for me.
Before you go, Jeff, real quick, I did want to chat about Bob Uecker with you. Mr. Baseball passing away earlier today at the age of 90. One of the great broadcasters in this game of baseball. A colorful personality, really funny guy. Now, I never met him. I was a big fan of his. Even as a kid, when he was in a major league, it's a lot of reasons a lot of non-Brewers fans like myself know him from. I wonder if you have any memories of the late Bob Uecker.
You know, I think our paths only crossed a couple of times because the Brewers were in the American League when I was covering the National League, and you know, I just quite frankly haven't traveled as much in the past couple of years. You know, the Bob Uecker story that immediately comes to mind, and Kevin Barker's talked about this on air. When Kevin Barker was a rookie with the Milwaukee Brewers, Bob Uecker just ripped him during a broadcast. Yeah, and Mrs. Barker, Kevin's mom, didn't take kindly to it, so she wrote Bob a letter. That's as far as Kevin's never told me any more of the details of the story beyond that. But that's kind of the Bob Uecker. That's the Bob Uecker story that stands out. I mean, like most people, I know him from his work in TV. You know, the Miller Lite commercials that he did. I do know this man to be able to get up every morning, go to the ballpark, describe a game, and do it over and over and over again for the amount of time he had to do it through all the generations he had to do it for is, you know, that is really something. This same with the guy like Vin Scully, to be good enough that you are in your late 70s or your 80s and you still feel current is really something. And very quickly, there's one other Bob Uecker story I really like, and a friend of mine, Jose Ortiz, Houston Astros, former Houston baseball writer. He now runs a website out of Houston, longtime sports reporter, shared a picture on Twitter today, on X, I should say, today, about a St. Louis Cardinals team photo where Bob Uecker is sitting beside Bob Gibson.
Okay.
And just as the photo is taken, he has reached over and grabbed Bob Gibson's hand and is holding his hand. And this was at a time where there was still a lot of racial tension in the United States, in St. Louis. And that picture, apparently, I didn't know this, but that picture apparently created a real furor at the time. And I think that tells you a little bit about Bob Uecker, the person, that maybe, you know, we didn't know, or that is maybe it goes a little deeper than the guy who was really funny, the guy on TV, the guy in the commercials and all that. And I found that when I saw that picture, I thought, okay, that's an important, that's something that is very important, I think, in explaining why a guy like Bob Uecker was able to have the longevity that he had.
Thanks again to Jeff. Before we go, I actually did want to play a quick clip for you. I was a big Bob Uecker fan myself. And again, just to be clear, I did not grow up a Brewers fan, but I did grow up a fan of baseball movies and wrestling when I was younger. And Bob was actually a big part of all three of those things. Major League remains one of my favorite sports movies, baseball or otherwise. And I'll never not think of Harry Doyle when I think of Bob Uecker. So here he is in some of my favorite parts that we can play. It's a bit of a crass movie, though I love it still. But here's the late Bob Uecker in some of the better moments of the great Major League.
Hello again, everybody. Harry Doyle here, welcoming all you friends of the feather to another season of Indians baseball. A lot of new faces in Chief Wahoo's tribe this year as they take on the defending American League champs, the New York Yankees. And hopefully we'll have some of the names that go with those faces before their first at-bat. Anyway, listen to the roar of the crowd as the Indians take the field. Yes, sir, they love this club here in Cleveland. Just a reminder, fans, about Die Hard Night coming up here at the stadium. Free admission to anyone who was actually alive the last time the Indians won a pennant. Vaughn, a juvenile delinquent in the offseason in his Major League debut. Vaughn into the windup in his first offering. Just a bit outside. He tried the corner and missed. Ball four. Ball eight. Low, and Vaughn has walked the bases loaded on 12 straight pitches.
Just a bit outside. That's up there with any quote from any sports movie ever. Truly is. He really made that movie as memorable as it was. Like a lot of those guys did, like Charlie Sheen and so on. But Bob Uecker's the man. We'll certainly remember the great life and career of Bob Uecker, who passed away earlier today. At the age of 90. But that does do it for us. Like I said on the last off-season check-in, I will continue doing these sporadically throughout the off-season. We'll continue to monitor for news. Ben Nicholson-Smith of Sportsnet, of course, attempting to dispel rumors about the team trading Vladdy, saying, quote-unquote, the Jays are actively negotiating with Vladdy on an extension. So I mentioned that to Jeff. If that does come to pass, or if a big free agent, Sasaki or otherwise, does sign with the team, Blair, Barker, Blake, or myself will be on the case. But until then, as always, thanks again for listening to Jay's Talk. I'm Sho Ali. We'll talk to you later.
Just a bit outside.